we're actually giving a lien on the property, which a lot of people don't do, but it gives them collateral and it securitizes them. So that's been a helpful aspect in terms of making them feel comfortable about taking money out of the stock market, which is a big loser.
If you have over $200,000 sitting stagnant in your bank, retirement account, or home equity, then you're literally losing money. On this show, you learn how to get that money working for you consistently and conservatively. Learn to grow your nest egg with your host, Sean Winslow. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to another Multifamily Monday episode. I'm your host, Sean Winslow, and this is the Multifamily Money Podcast. What is going on, everyone? You know what the fee is. If you get any value out of this show, please, please share it to a friend, family, colleague, acquaintance, someone who you think could also get some value out of this. That's how we grow the show. And that's how we get in front of more people. And also another way is by leaving a rating and review. That's how Apple's algorithm works, is based on 5-star ratings and reviews is how they kind of promote and push shows to the forefront. And so I wanted to thank someone who left a rating review. For those of that have been listening for a while, you know, I had a push to get over to 100 Apple ratings. And we did that. We were over 100. And then something happened where a bunch got deleted. And we were back, I think, down to like 71, 72, somewhere around there. Now we're back up to 94. So we're getting close back to that 100. And I just wanted to thank someone who left a review. And that is Barry Jensen. 5 out of 5 stars. You've given me hope that I don't have to limit myself to one career for the rest of my life in order to attain financial independence. I'm looking forward to hearing some of your upcoming episodes and seeing more of your work. Thank you, Sean. Well, Barry, thank you. I appreciate you taking time out of your day to leave that. That means a lot. Put a lot into creating this. And then it's great just to hear when people are actually getting value from this and making a little bit of a difference, even if it's just a small difference. It's nice to hear that. So thank you, Barry. All right. You all know the deal. On Mondays, it's everything multifamily. Talk about all things investing in multifamily real estate. And today it's a little different because usually I'm bringing on people that are buying a lot of existing properties. Could be long-term rentals, midterm, short-term, flips, wholesale, all that stuff. But today, is our guest is a developer, ground up, talking about big multifamily, 200, 400 unit complexes in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Her name is D.L. Campbell, and she's awesome. We had a great conversation regarding all things development. She is an engineer by trade and realized that she needed to diversify her investments and got into real estate and went directly to commercial. We talk about this. She just saw the benefits of commercial over residential. And so she went that direction right out of the gate, which is great. As you all know, I did the same. And she started developing existing assets like what we do, and then eventually went into development. So we talk all things development, from acquiring the land, getting it permitted, zoned, entitled, to breaking ground, and then all the different types of exit strategy. So this is a really great show with a lot of nuggets that you're going to want to take some notes on. All right, everybody. Again, thank you for tuning in as always. And let's introduce DL. DL, hey, how are you today?
I've been wonderful. How about yourself, Sean?
I am great. Welcome to the show. And thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day. Get on here and talk to us.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah. I'm excited about this one. We're gonna talk about some cool stuff. But before we get into what you're doing in real estate, just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to where you are today.
Well, I appreciate that, Sean. Today, I am on a contiguous property to our lot. We just moved up about 2 weeks ago. We have 23 acres we're purchasing for a Class A luxury build, but it didn't start there, right? That's why my office is in such great shape right now, but we're getting there. It's a process. I actually got started in commercial real estate in 2005, and I was working as an engineer, and I have about 30 years as an engineer. So in 2005, I could see some writing on the wall. I needed to diversify. There was a lot of offshore happening from a number of different countries. And so I thought, well, my engineering career is on track. I need to diversify now. So that's where it all started. I started to learn about different kinds of real estate, just really dive in. And I landed on commercial real estate because it's actually very logical and it suits how I'm wired. I learned about all kinds of real estate, actually commercial real estate, including face value engineering for self-storage, a conversion from a warehouse to a self-storage unit, was able to speak with Donald at a real estate expo about a deal and learned how to walk hard and close that door on a seller who was trying to manipulate me. So I just learned a lot. And I learned about multifamily, light industrial, and all the different property types. I picked up a property in 2009. It was small multifamily in East Dallas, and I forced about 85% vacancy. I kicked out all the drug dealers and the prostitutes and all of the crime, and I did the rehab with the team and re-tenanted with small working families, elderly, disabled, and completely transformed that neighborhood by doing that turn. And I learned every aspect of the business by doing it myself. So I held that property for 6 years. I doubled the value in the first year, which was really good. And since then, I've done face value engineering. I've done acquisition services on all different property types. We're at honorswaygroup.com, so folks can look that up in terms of different property types. But it's really good to find your niche. It's good to stay where the market is. And right now, I would say it would be important to focus on the class of the property, the class of the asset that you're looking to spend your time and money on. Make sure it is recession-proof, like we saw with retail over the pandemic. Who knew that would happen to retail, which is usually a solid. Let's keep an eye on that asset class and make sure it's recession-proof.
That's great. And you mentioned that commercial just seemed more logical to you. Do you mind just digging into that a little bit and sharing with the listeners why you think it's more logical?
Well, it is. It's all and only about the numbers. And even if we're working with soft commercial with multifamily, frankly, it's not my favorite. But as a soft commercial product, think about it. Everybody needs a place to live. And in Dallas, especially, you can't find a place to buy, a house to buy. You can't find an apartment to rent. So we're running as developers to meet that demand. So we're still staying in the logical standpoint of it's all and only about the numbers. We're working with people's hard-earned money, and we're working with our time as well. So we have to stay stick-based, and we don't have to live on that property. We have a property manager who will handle those people issues. So that's our responsibility, is to have a great property manager there. But still, logic-based, and it's all and only about the numbers.
Love it. So it's kind of cool. I did a similar thing where I wanted to start right off in commercial. Just to me, it made more sense. You're trading based on a net operating income, like a business, and not based on perceived value by what your neighbor just sold his house for down the street, which we know that can fluctuate quite a bit with depending on what the market's doing. So to me, it made a lot more sense. Obviously, there's a lot more factors to why beyond that, but I think that to me, that's one of the bigger ones. And so you started off right in commercial, and it sounds like you started off buying existing, maybe not necessarily stabilized, but existing properties, and now you're developing. Is that correct?
That's right. It was an existing property, but it wasn't stable in any way, shape, or form. And now that's where the opportunity is to go in there and to force the value. Like, the commercial aspect is supposed to have all the same sinks, all the same showers, and all the same paint color. That was not the case in this property that I picked up, but I was able to do it while I had a W-2, put that discretionary money into the property. Now we're developing 23 acres, and we're looking to put about 425 apartments, class A luxury. Now, if we're talking about an asset class that is sustainable through a recession, that was really what triggered that change to the class A luxury. We have a property in Northwest Austin that was built in 2018, and it's 240 units, it's 22 north, and it stayed stable through the pandemic. None of this rent moratorium business that the Supreme Court has told the CDC they can't do that again, it's unlawful, but Congress could. So we have to watch that. We have to have a number of units, so diversified on any other property type. any other property class. But with ours, what we chose was the Class A luxury that it caters to that professional tenant. Primarily, the professionals will have a much higher income. Their focus is they're going to go to work and come home, work, build a career. And an afterthought is pay the rent. They're not sitting around thinking, oh, how am I not going to pay rent this month? Their focus is on building their career. So when we're talking about an asset class, then that's what we need to be safe with: diversification, recession proof.
Yeah, great. And so are you primarily going into Class A from this point on?
Yes, we are. It's a beautiful asset. The 22 North property was successful. There was a profit of about $22 million when it sold in 2021. And that's what we're focused on here in Dallas, Class A luxury.
Just to play a little devil's advocate, do you ever get worried if we were to go into a recession? And generally, at least in the past, high payers usually get let go first, just because that's payroll is usually a company's biggest expense and it's easier to cut someone making 150, 250,000 than it is a couple people making 30, 40. Does that worry you? Because then those people might have to get out of that Class A and maybe move down to a Class B.
They might lose their job. And we actually do have to look at the worst case scenario. So our numbers are built on the worst case scenario. There's no place for the property to go but to up in terms of performance. We look at all of that great stuff, Sean, because it's not really a negative. It's a matter of fact that the market will change. And with almost two decades in the commercial real estate industry, I've seen these changes. Another thing that could happen is, hey, interest rates could normalize. We're not doing a knee-jerk reaction when the interest rates go back to where they normally are. It was a weird market having those interest rates so low for so long. And I think that unfortunately people got used to that. They were underwriting with those low interest rates. And then when interest rate would increase by a half a point, they would have to bring another $250,000 on a small property to the closing table. So some of those deals should actually be failing because they weren't underwritten well. But if we stay, just like you're saying, in worst case scenario, what if the vacancy rate is 7% that the bank requires, not the normal 3% Dallas rate? What if the inflation is the normal 3% inflation rate, not 8%? We're not going to underwrite that. What if the operating expenses are not 25% on a brand new asset, but maybe 38%. That's how we've underwritten it. We absolutely, just like you're saying, we want to underwrite the worst case scenario.
That's great. Definitely sounds like you're an engineer.
Yeah, sorry.
No.
Recovering.
No. My partner's in the same way when it comes to underwriting, which is great.
Okay, we'll pray for you. Yeah. Right on.
Hey. You gotta under promise, over deliver, right? So
that's right.
That's the way to do it. And then when underwriting, that means you're gonna maybe take some more conservative steps than others might. If you don't mind, I'd love to just get into like what a ground up development deal looks like, what that type of work. Obviously, you got to get the land, but it's not just that. Then you got to go through permitting and zoning, and you got to get plans, a builder, all that. So if you don't mind, maybe you don't have to get into too much detail if you don't want, but just kind of running through that and.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. You stop me when it's too much.
No, go for it.
Okay. It's really very interesting for me because I've worked on the phase value engineering a lot, acquisition services of different property types, but I'm really enjoying this developer lead position. We have a stellar team of some working owners, some co-GPs. When we're talking about the acquisition services part of it, I spent from last August to December full time looking for properties, looking for land, looking all over Dallas, looking on the internet, driving around, driving for dollars. So that first piece was finding vacant land that is off market. The second piece is, and I did find one actually, I was analyzing two properties between the city of Denton that we're working in, and I found a little sign that had a name and a cell phone number. And I called him and I said, we're looking for land. He said, great. I have about an acre and a half of medical zones. I said, well, we're really looking for 13 to 30 acres. He said, I have another property around the corner. No sign. But it was doing that due diligence of driving for dollars and doing all the internet research that found this property. Great to work with the seller of the property directly. No broker fees, no breakdown of communication. I can call him on his cell. So really, really transparent there. The second phase would be we need to be looking for multifamily zoned. And with that multifamily zoning, we don't have to go through city council. That's a big deal. We don't have to hold the property. It's a $6 million property. We don't have to hold that on our books, hoping and praying that we will get our land use. The other important part of that is that we need to have our utilities to the lot, gas, electric, water. Well, even not gas, but water, electric, and wastewater. Because one of the properties we had to walk away from had the sanitary sewer. It was about 500 feet away, 500 linear feet. And the city wanted us to pull it and swap it out from clay to PVC. Well, that would be about $1.5 million. So it was just that it makes the numbers not work. That would be the other important piece, the zoning, the multifamily zoning that we need to have, like MF20, MF22, so 20 units an acre, 22 units an acre to build with, and utilities to the street. Right now, we are booking it on our entitlements. We are working with our city partner to put our entitlements in place. We've gotten through our environmental stuff, which is normally the hardest to get through. And we're booking it on the rest of our entitlements. We're about 60 or 70 days from entitlement, maybe 80. And we're really in a good position for that. We've got a stellar team of co-GPs working on it. This is obviously too big a project for one person. It'll have a value of $8 million, $9 million an acre when we're done. And that's about $200 million. So it's a pretty big number. It's a serious number. And we have to watch every tenth dime per square foot on our budget to make sure that we stay within budget.
That's awesome. So what's the next step for you all then? When, sure, you already have, you know, builder lined up and obviously the plans. When do you break ground? At least hopefully when you break ground.
Yeah, we're doing great in terms of our time schedule. We have interviewed about 11 construction companies, and we've settled on one who has 50 years in Dallas in terms of construction. We are finishing our entitlements, getting the permits, and breaking ground here shortly. We're doing it ourselves in order to keep the work and keep the equity. That's one of the challenges that we just kind of worked through. Do we hire a developer to take that 10%? And work with the GC. We just decided to do it ourselves, and we're doing a fabulous job at that. My team is doing a fabulous job at that. Get the permits, break ground, and have the GC come in when we go vertical. And they're going to take the onus of the property at that point. They're going to start driving this process. They have to perform to the bond that's on the bank. And then we'll be able to get the keys from a building, get a temporary CO, and take that building back pre-lease a month ahead of time. And every month we'll get a new building with a temporary certificate of occupancy.
That's awesome. And so if you're able to disclose, how much equity do you have to bring to the table to take a deal this size down?
Yeah, I don't mind that at all. It's a part of the puzzle. We do have the capital stack completely built. We have a couple openings for some private investors, but we're really in a great situation for that, just like you all are with your properties as well, your investments. We have our construction piece lined up a number of ways through our commercial broker, our loan broker. We have our HUD loan in place through our commercial loan broker. And there is a possibility that you can do a construction loan through HUD, but it would take about a year. We don't want to wait that time frame. And the interest rates for construction loans right now are pretty good. I've seen it at 9%, and people keep building. So if our interest rate for construction is 5%, we're still well under that high cap. What we did with our $119 million construction budget is we're breaking it out into three phases. So $35, $40 million a pop and a phase. And then we need to bring about $4 million of that in cash, but we don't have to bring it all at once. So we're good now. We're going to open it up for another capital raise in September, and we've got a lot lined up. What I'm finding too, here's an opportunity, is the more cash that's in the account, the more it attracts money. You probably found that too.
Yeah.
They don't have to be first in.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Have you seen that with yours?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's with anything, right? People are a little hesitant to be the first to go, but as soon as I see other people, it's more, it turns to that FOMO, that fear of missing out.
Yeah, it makes it easier. They don't have to be the first one, and it makes them feel comfortable that it's padded a bit. We're actually giving a lien on the property, which a lot of people don't do, but it gives them collateral and it securitizes them. So that's been a helpful aspect in terms of making them feel comfortable about taking money out of the stock market, which is a big loser. 401ks are now, again, 201ks. People are moving money out of the stock market like crazy, bringing them into investments like yours, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's just great to get people off of that roller coaster, right? It's not to say you need to put everything into real estate, because no, I get it, diversification, but you shouldn't have all your baskets in the market or your eggs in that stock market basket either. So I'm with you on that.
Yeah, good idea.
So what is the estimated time frame from when you finally break ground to when you get that first CO?
That's about 12 months. We'll get our clubhouse in about 12 months and we'll start leasing, pre-leasing the first building. Every month after that, we'll get an apartment building.
That's exciting. So what does a day look like for DL, the developer? What does a day look like?
This morning, I got up and watched one of our sermons from church and start my day contemplative and slow. And then I went into our tool that we're using called HubStaff. We're utilizing that. And it helps us to track the action items. It tracks the timing for our executive assistant and our research and audit. But it, for the coaching piece, it also tracks the action items in our project so that we can make sure that we're hitting our deadlines. So I've got done already this morning and it's only 9:42, so we're in good shape. Gave some instruction on what we can, some feedback for our city partner, and one of our working owners is going to follow up on that. And basically, that's how we're structuring it, working through HubStaff to make sure that we're meeting our weekly goals. Some of our team has some daily goals that they're working on. And then if I need to pick up and handle some action items, I'm always available to do that. Yesterday, I had a city council meeting over at the office, the development office, and that was really helpful to get to know our city partners. And if we need to submit a special use permit or something like that through the city council, then it's a familiar face. So that's been real handy. Living right near the property, the contiguous property, is having great value. When I need to meet vendors at the property or meet investors at the property, I'm right there. If I need to go over to our civil, then we're right there. You know, putting the big rocks in first.
Yep. What was the name of that tool that you said you used to manage responsibilities?
Yep, we use HubStaff.
Okay. Is that similar to an Asana or a Monday.com?
I don't know that, but it looks like Agile in the corporate world. And so it's object-oriented. It has a lot of bells and whistles, but we're using it for projects, for action items. You can put your comments in there. You can make checklists and you can assign roles and permissions to Agile-like software for project management. It's been such a great tool for us. I'm not a micromanager, and if you're managing people at that level, it takes so much more time and effort. But this is very transparent in the way that everybody can see the project or not, and people can go and log into their the action item in their project and get the work done, and an email notifies you if something happens on an action item. So you're always kept informed. It's been a big, big help for us.
Great. Yeah, we just started using Monday.com, which sounds like it's similar, but I find it very beneficial when there's less human oversight needed. Usually there's less error when there's those automations set up. And also everyone can just jump in and be on the same page and know what has been done, what hasn't been done, what needs to be completed. So I agree with you. It's been a game changer. All right. So
Monday.com, right? Monday.com?
Yes. Yeah, correct.
Okay.
So DL, for this type of development, what is kind of the investment objective and horizon? Kind of like a big, for lack of a better term, BRRRR, where you're going to build it, refinance out and keep, or is this develop, build, and then sell to an investor?
We have a couple exit strategies, of course, and that is a great question. I mean, it's a great question. We need to have exit strategies for safety and for future investment as well, investing in our time. So our exit strategies are, we could sell it now and we could flip it. It's a $6 million property. Right now, the value is actually $9 million. So there's $3 million of equity there. It's a safe bet. We could flip it. That's our first exit strategy. We could entitle it. The property is now not worth $6 million. It's worth $15 million. And we could flip it to another developer as an exit strategy. So there would be about $8 million there. So we could also flip it at each phase, phase one, phase two, phase three, our best exit strategy. And then there's another exit strategy of building it and holding it for the cash flow, which it's a great cash flow machine. Our best exit strategy is to build it and sell it. So our goal is to stabilize it year one and sell it. It's a nice profit for our working owners and for our equity partners. And we'll do that several times in Dallas and Austin. If you look at the Dallas market, we talked a little bit about this pre-program. It is the strongest market. But don't come here. Don't come here. Seriously, it popped back after the pandemic. The retail, the restaurants popped right back in February, and we started to have traffic jams again. And the rents are higher in Dallas than they are in Austin. The salaries for professionals in Dallas are higher than in Austin. So that's why we're not looking at a bunch of stuff all over. We are focused on our market.
I love that. And yeah, it seems like everyone's going to Dallas, Dale. I'm sure you're seeing that.
No go.
Like I was mentioning before, I have some friends and I guess colleagues that are from there and invest there. So I always hear about the crazy competition that's in Texas in general, but it's specifically Dallas. Yes.
So. Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like you have an excellent project to work on somewhere in Dallas proper. It sounds like it's infill. It's not away from the job. It's close to job. So yeah. Awesome. Good for you. Yeah,
you can't argue with Dallas and the demographics that are there. And I don't know if you've heard this. I'm sure you have, or you can correct me if I'm wrong on this statistic, but I was told that, can't remember the number of years, if it's 5 or 10 years, but at some point in the future, it's going to be the biggest MSA in the country with how many people are moving to the DFW area. It's going to be bigger than LA, bigger than New York, which is, if that's true, that's crazy growth in the next 10 years or however, whatever horizon that is, it's still crazy growth.
It is amazing. And the Transit Authority is looking at a 50-year look, and they're looking to see that Dallas and Austin and Houston will grow together. So that is their 50-year look. That's pretty
wow.
Amazing.
That's crazy. If I grow together, you mean they're going to be like one large MSA, right?
A conglomerate.
Even though they're
that's pretty amazing.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that definitely will be the biggest MSA in the country. That's awesome. And so are you solely focused on this project? Or are you still looking for other, filling that pipeline for potential new development deals?
That's a great question. As soon as our GC takes over the reins here, we'll have a little bit more flexibility to start looking for some more land. And I've got a couple areas in mind that I haven't had a chance to do the due diligence on, but we will do that next property. Yeah.
Is this your first development deal of this size?
It's a big one. We have a former property northwest of Austin, 22 North, and it was built in 2018. It is found out to be a recession-proof, one-phase build on 14 acres, 240 units, Class A luxury, 22 North, and much of the team has worked on that property. It sold for a profit of $22 million in 2021. It's stable through the recession.
That's great. So it's kind of a rinse and repeat, if you will.
Yes, absolutely. We're using a lot of the same footprint in 22 North, the civil, the townhome style, some tuck under garages, vaulted ceilings, stainless steel appliances, top of the line fixtures. We brought the underwriting from 22 North into this property, and we're doing a lot of the same. Now, a couple differences between Austin and Dallas. Dallas has higher rents, so we had to adjust that. And even working with worst case scenario numbers, I had to auto-correct myself and give the property a chance to really look at a median income there. Also, the job market is better here. It's about three times the size and opportunity in Dallas as Austin. And so the salaries are higher. So a lot has come from 22 North and with some adjustments.
I'm sure that's probably common, right? It makes sense from an efficiency standpoint and an economic standpoint to reuse plans and civil plans, because if you can, right, that just makes a lot of sense. I'm sure a lot of developers do that. And look at, I guess, the average square feet of other apartments in the area, because obviously you could shrink the square feet per unit, you can fit more units and vice versa. So do you look at that as, do you lean more towards fitting more units or getting as close to that market average of square feet?
That's a good question. When you look at unit size, and the average square foot of 22 North was about 1061, where a comparable Class B would be about 900, 950, maybe about 900. Our unit sizes are bigger on the Class A luxury, and our rents are higher. So we need to look at that professional tenant, the architect, the engineer, the CFO who is coming into Dallas. They can't find a place to rent. They can't find a house to buy, but they still need to be serviced with living spaces that they're used to. They're going to rent for a year, a couple of years. Well, and they have a house built, then that's the kind of tenant type that we're looking at and those unit sizes.
That's awesome. And listeners, like, listen to that, what she just said. Obviously, numbers play a huge role in any type of investing, and especially development, because the numbers have to work. It also goes beyond the numbers. She's thinking about her customer that she's going to be, that property is going to be serving and what they're looking for. So it's not solely numbers. It's what you're filling in the market. And for her, Class A luxury, it's someone who's making more, and generally, they're going to want more square footage. That just makes sense. I'm glad you shared that. All right, DL, before I forget, where can listeners connect with you, find you?
Absolutely. I appreciate that. We're at honorswaygroup.com, honorswaygroup.com. There is a link to our current property, the Prestige at Mayhill, if you would like to take a look at that as an option, or if you need some guidance or assistance with your own project, we'd be happy to do that. I'm glad. I appreciate, Sean, your sharing about the current properties that you're looking at for your listeners as well. So it's really good to get together and do some knowledge sharing around that.
Yeah, definitely. And I appreciate your time. You give us a small masterclass on developing. So I'm sure listeners who are interested in that got a lot out of it. I know I did. So I appreciate that. But before I let you go, I usually ask the same two questions, the final two. And the first has two parts here. One, why did you choose real estate to build wealth? And part B to that, and what has real estate, what type of life has it created for you?
Well, I appreciate that. With commercial real estate, you have both appreciation and cash flow. We want to make sure the properties that we're choosing have growth in both areas, because if one area you're not getting your cash flow, you want to make sure you get your appreciation. That's what is difficult in this market where everything is doubly appreciated already. So we look at off-market deals, right? it just is logical to me to stick with commercial real estate. You have the duplicity of units. You have the hundreds of units that are diversifying your payment to your loan. You've got all of your units that have the same paint. They have the same faucets. So your maintenance can go to one property instead of multiple residential properties. So it just really made a lot of logical sense to me. You've got a place where you can put your cash that it's not going to be lost to inflation or to the stock market. So it's a really good investment. And if you can get, you know, membership in the property LLC or lien on the property, then you've got security. You're securitized. So there's, as a hard asset, there's a big difference with that from any other soft asset. The lifestyle that it has afforded me is, as a developer, we just say we're just getting by. So we're not taking a lot of cruises and things like that. We're super busy, but I love it. I'm not a spring chicken, having almost 2 decades of commercial real estate in my belt and a lot of engineering before that. But people have asked me too, why are you still working so much, like 50, 70 hours a week? Because I really, truly love it. And it gives me the freedom where if I want to go travel and see my kids and grandkids, I can put in a half a day on my laptop and then go play for the rest of the day. That is a big sense of freedom. You know, another thing that it gives us is some control over how we spend our moments. We don't get to choose those moments all the time. But if we are part of that management team, we can construct an environment where it's a good environment to work in. It's hard, but good. And we have some say in that. I like the freedom commercial real estate gives us.
Yes, I agree. Time freedom is one of the great benefits of commercial real estate. And it's one of the, I mentioned this before, to sure my listeners have heard this, but that flexibility of calendar was a big draw to me. When I made a change in my career from finance, it was first create the life I wanted to live and then create the work around it that would fit in. And it just so happened to be real estate. I was already passionate about real estate in general, but it just so happened that it just fit. And that's true. I love the flexibility and that you can work anywhere and you can also, if you want to, take an afternoon off. And it's great. All right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And your investors too, you're creating lifestyle for your investors, because if they are a hardworking professional, they're probably time starved. Yes. And if you can give them an outlet that is safe and beats inflation, that's a good deal for them.
Yes. And that passive income, they start young enough and can grow it. It could eventually be a supplement to that active income, right? And then they can ride off into the sunset and do whatever they want.
Absolutely. You can feel good about what you're doing for people there.
Yeah. It's great what you're doing for the community as well, right? And the residents that live at the property. That's another thing that I love too, is when you go in and, excuse me, when we do these value add projects, having the residents come up to you and thank you for the work you're doing. It's such a good feeling.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Last question here. And since this is not only a multifamily show, but a personal finance show, because that is my background, this one question pertains to more of a personal finance. And that is, if you had a time machine question, if you had a time machine and you could go back and visit younger DL, give one piece of financial advice to yourself, what would that be?
Diversify earlier. Absolutely. Because we get in this interesting profession where I've traveled the world as an engineer and top of my game in my profession. And I've been sent a lot of places to fix problems, but we're working kind of in a glass tower at that point. And while we have the discretionary income, we need to be minimalist more. I could have done that. I just didn't know to be more of a minimalist and invest more. And it could have happened earlier.
You know, I like that. And I feel the same. And I feel like a lot of people feel the same. And I hope this show helps others out to realize that earlier as well, because I could have used something like this at a younger age too. But at the end of the day, I'm glad where I am. But I agree, if I had diversified and started earlier, I would be in a different place.
Excellent. Thank you for that.
Yeah. DL, thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your wealth of knowledge with not only me, but the listeners as well. And it's been fun. So thank you.
Yes, sir. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
All right, listeners. And you know, easy doesn't pay well. And instant gratification is self-destructive. So you got to get out there and not only work hard for your money, but have your money work hard for you so you can create the life of your dreams and we can all make this world a better place. All right, I'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, this is Sean Winslow. After being in the financial service industry for years and having candid conversations with good people just like you, I realized that so many of us are wanting an investment strategy that provides solid returns and consistent income without the bumps in the road. There's little known secret that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. There is an investment out there that is less volatile and the returns are stronger. Get more details by going to greenbriercg.com and clicking on the free e-report. And by the way, if this show has provided you any value, then feel free to leave an honest written review and of course, share it with a friend who needs it. See you next week for another great show.